All right, this is Steeler Country. I'm your host, Tony, alongside my co-host, Joe. Mike cannot join us this week. Unfortunately, we're doing this very late notice. You know, life sometimes gets in the way of doing these podcasts, this being one of those weeks. You know, we're going to go over a few things tonight. Not a long podcast. We'll do the whole MVP season wrap-up stuff next week. So let's get into the news. Joe, just breaking today, Chris Rainey arrested in Florida, charged with battery, and then the Steelers cut him. To me, he seemed like a guy who, you know, first of all, he clearly the coaching staff wanted him to be a big part of the offense, tried to work him in as much as possible. And it seemed like, you know, they were giving him every chance they could. You know, this off-the-field stuff, though, is really getting in the way of you know, the Steelers' plans. You know, this you had the Mendenhall stuff in the past. There's some who got arrested. I'm trying to think of the Steeler that got arrested. Oh, Ta'amu got arrested. This is a sad end to the Chris Rainey story. I thought he had a lot of potential on the team.
Well, you know, hey, everybody. Steeler country goes. There's no Steelers in the playoffs, but Steeler country beats on. All right. Tony, it's good to be here talking about the Steelers, not necessarily about this particular subject.
Yeah.
You know, I agree with you. It's a sad ending to a man's tenure, very short tenure with the Steelers. You know, on the one hand, obviously, I feel bad for the situation and for the young man. I don't know what's going on, but really, I mean, what kind of a, you know, it's a battery with his girlfriend, and you know,
yeah,
you're a man, especially an athletic, you know, I mean, he's not a big football player, but all football players are pretty big specimens, right?
Yeah. Yes.
So, I mean, you know, and it doesn't really matter what woman you're talking about. There's never really a reason. I shouldn't even say it like that. There is just no, I can't come up with a reason to hit, you know, your girlfriend. I just can't. I mean, unless in some kind of self-defense, coming at you with a knife or a gun or some kind of weapon is going to do bodily harm. It's going to smack you over the face with a frying pan. So in most cases, you can defend yourself anyway.
Yeah, and this was not that. So, I mean, this was...
So, you know, I mean, when you analyze all of that, you go, hey, you know what, dude? I don't know what's going on with you. I don't know what kind of character you are, but that is a display of absolutely the lowest character, you know, you can come up with.
Mm-hmm.
So from a Steeler point of view, from a Steeler management, you know, point of view, as a Steeler fan, who doesn't want to see the Steelers, you know, fall into this trap of these, you know, these less than honorable characters playing for the Steelers. I mean, I don't want to cheer for a guy like that. I mean, we kind of talked about this a couple of years ago with a few other situations,
yes,
on the Steelers. So, you know, I'm glad the Steelers wasted no time. You know, the news hit this afternoon, and, you know, here a few hours later, he's no longer a Pittsburgh Steeler, as it should be.
Yeah.
You know, hopefully he can turn his life around and all that. But, hey, man, you know, I don't even know that you get one shot at what he did, let alone, you know, do I need to really wish this man well? Do I need to do that?
Yeah. I mean, what do you think? What do you think this does, though, to the Steelers' offseason plans as far as running back? I mean, we talked last week a little bit about, you know, what should be the number one priority. You know, Chris Rainey clearly wasn't going to be a starting running back on this team, but he did add, you know, that Mawelde Moore type, you know, third down, use him out of the backfield type player. Is that something the Steelers need to add back into the team, or? You know, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think you know my thoughts on that. You know, I commented over the course of the season, I do not think the Steelers have, outside of Mendenhall, who is a world class talent at running back, who never really got to witness that talent, you know, play for us, really. I mean, he's
right,
either injured or he's got other problems going on. But I don't think in Dwyer and Redmond or Rainey did we have a world-class talent at running back. Now, I don't know that you have to have that. you know, Shanahan seems to be able to just build them out of whole cloth and an offensive line and a scheme, a scheme that, you know, that gets guys into space and takes, you know, takes advantage of their natural talent. But I don't think even Mike Shanahan could make a top running back out of any of these guys. So I have, and I think I've been pretty vocal about that. I haven't seen it. And so, you know, you asked me what should the Steelers do. I commented to you earlier in the season, I would like to see the Steelers. I don't know if I said it on the podcast because we weren't really talking about, you know, next season moves and stuff, but, you know, as the season obviously is coming to a close, you know, you start thinking about, okay, you know, what went wrong here and what's going to get changed. And I would like to see a renewed running game, which is my whole argument with the Ben Roethlisberger crap.
Right, but what do you think about Rainey in particular? That dynamic to the offense, the speed, the use of him out of the backfield, use of him on maybe some gadget plays. Do you think that style of running back? I mean, not as a feature back, but adding that X factor, a Darren Sproles type to the offense.
I have to tell you that it doesn't really excite me.
Mm-hmm.
I understand why it excites other people, and I'm a broken record. I apologize to Steeler country, especially probably the younger Steeler fans. But I have to tell you that it's just a bunch of nonsense. It's just a bunch of razzle dazzle that I personally don't find that interesting. I mean, it's a lot of fun to watch, you know, and all that jazz, but it's finesse football, if you ask me, and I am sick and tired of finesse football on the offensive side of the ball for the Pittsburgh Steelers. I don't like it. I want muscle football. That's what I want to see. So, you know, first give me my workhorse, give me my ass-kicking running back who's going to put a hurting on a defense, who's going to carry the ball 25 times a game and is going to gain 100 yards.
Yeah,
that's the guy I want. And I don't want him to gain, you know, 80 yards on one run and 20 yards on the other 24 runs, okay? I don't want that. I want 4 yards of freaking carry and the biggest cloud of dust he can make with the most defensive bodies on the ground bruised from trying to bring this guy down again, okay? That's what I want. I want linebackers who freak out the way the Notre Dame linebackers did in that championship game every time a play action goes to my running back. That's what I want. Okay.
So then throw
the ball to the tight end, then throw the ball down the field. Then you can get your little scat back out of the backfield if you want. But that's fluff that comes later. Give me my muscle football. I want it now.
So Ben Roethlisberger for Adrian Peterson straight up. I think that's what I'm hearing. I do. All right. Let's transition over to Art Rooney's press conference. This has become an interesting development in the last couple of seasons. Art Rooney talking to the media after the season is over and really, you know, setting the tone for the offseason and where the Steelers are headed, you know, really in the next 12 months. Last year, he talked about the need to protect Ben Roethlisberger and that was going to be a huge focus going into the next season, was we have to protect Ben Roethlisberger. And I think we all saw this season, number one, drafting DeCastro and Mike Adams with our first two picks in the draft. Getting Todd Haley in here who implemented a quick style of offense, they called it dink and dunk, but really getting the ball out of Ben Roethlisberger's hands. And that was what you saw, and that started with Art Rooney's press conference right after 2011. So right after 2012, what does Art Rooney come out and say in this press conference? Well, he talked about a couple things. Number one, he talked about, look, defensively, we have to get pressure on the quarterback. It wasn't there this year. We have to get it back. And number two, we have to create turnovers, and those two go hand in hand. That's really what he talked about. And while I'm not shocked to hear that, it is interesting in a season in which I would say that while, yes, those two things were a problem, I don't know that they were the reason that we went 8-8. And I don't know that that improving those areas makes us a Super Bowl contender. What are your thoughts, Joe?
I actually have two trains of thought on this whole thing, and they're not about the, you know, they're from two different dimensions of that. It's not that I have thoughts that are in conflict. So the first thing, I'll address the most obvious, that is the defensive question. that's raised, and that is we need to pressure the quarterback. I think we addressed that on the podcast. You do need to pressure the quarterback. And we don't, and that's why, you know, you have to wreak havoc on an offense in order to create turnovers. But turnovers, you know, I know turnovers help you win games, but you could look at this season and say, you know what, you know, your conclusion, Tony, is correct. That's not why we lost football games. We didn't lose football games because we couldn't make stops, at least late in the season. Early in the season, we lost football games because we couldn't make stops.
Right.
But that was only 2-3 weeks, and that changed fast, and the pressure on the quarterback did not change. There was none.
Right.
And the turnovers didn't change. There were none. But we started winning. Why we started winning? Well, we moved famously now, at least on this podcast, Keenan Lewis, where he would go solo, one-on-one, man-to-man, on the second receiver, and we'd have Ike Taylor on the first receiver with safety help.
Yep.
That shut offenses down. They just couldn't. They didn't know what to do. And I have to tell you something. That's a safe strategy for the likes of Peyton Manning, for the likes of Tom Brady, for the likes of Aaron Rodgers. These guys, they love when you blitz them. They love to pick apart a defense because they can read faster than anybody else in the league. It's what makes them great. Anybody, any of these quarterbacks who get on an NFL team as a starter, you know, they can hit a Coke can from 100 yards away, 99 times out of 100, all right, if you give them enough time. But they can't, a lot of them can't do, they don't even know which way their own end zone is. They forget what jerseys, their color, their guys are wearing if you put pressure on them. So some of the guys give out, but not the top guys. So it's not a way to win a Super Bowl, I don't think, because I think you're going to run into these future Hall of Fame quarterbacks every year. Somewhere
yeah.
along the line in the postseason, that you know that's I guess I should bounce it back to you, but I do have another thought on that whole thing. But I agree with you in the end that what I said is I agree with you. I don't think that's the biggest problem on the team, pressure on the quarterback. It would be a lot more fun to see it, but
yeah, I mean I think what he's trying. I mean, look, clearly what he's getting at is we have to improve the linebacker play, right? We saw a great year out of Lawrence Timmons, a decent year out of Larry Foote, and pretty forgettable years out of James Harrison and Lamar Woodley. Now, we know Harrison's probably not going to be on the team next year, or if he is, you know, he's going to take a diminished role. I don't know. I just have I'm happy with the way the defense played at the end of the year. And you know, there wasn't pressure and there wasn't turnovers. But that didn't prevent us from losing games. We beat the Ravens in Baltimore with Charlie Batch, largely based on the play of the defense. You know, that wasn't a game where we dominated the turnover battle, you know, or we got huge pressure on Joe Flacco. That was a game where we disrupted their timing by being in the receiver's face, not the quarterback's face, in the receiver's face, making a quarterback go through his reads. You know, I think my concern with the defense is – In the game against Peyton Manning and Tom Brady, I think we can be pretty, you know, if we keep Keenan Lewis and we have Cortez Allen and Ike Taylor, you know, we can be pretty secure in the fact that the three receivers aren't going to have big games. But what happens with the tight end over the middle? You know, that's always been a concern, the running back out of the backfield. And it seems to me that our best blitzing linebacker, Lawrence Timmons, happens to be also our best cover linebacker. And that's a problem we have to solve. So I agree with him. Linebacker's a problem. I don't know if like last year, what Art Rooney says goes and we address, and this is what we address in the offseason. This is what becomes priority number one. Let's get a blitzing linebacker or let's get another dominant linebacker next to Lawrence Timmons. You know, I'd love to see Worlds get it. He led the team in sacks or was tied for the lead in sacks. Love to see him get a chance. Love to see Spence, who I thought looked great in the preseason. I know he's coming off of an ACL, but again, I think that there are other positions, especially in the draft, that you can go after that can have a more significant impact on the team than addressing a pass rush that I'm not even sure needs addressing.
Yeah, you know, the other thing that comes to mind is that, you know, the games that we lost, you know, at the very end of the game. I mean, we surrendered maybe 13 points by the time these games were over. These late season, the last three games that we lost. I'm trying to think how many points. There wasn't a lot of points in the Dallas game.
No, the Dallas game, I think we gave up like 23 in that game. We gave up 34 against San Diego, and there, you know,
San Diego game was horrible, yeah. Right? But you're a fan and you're emotional and all that, but you have to be, you know, you have to be a little analytical, and you have to look and you have to say, well, the top corners are out, the backup corners are out. I mean, what the hell did you expect? Tony Romo. You watched the news, the sports media talk about, hey, Tony Romo looked pretty good against the Steelers there, blah, 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 blah. And I'm going, what are you talking about?
Yeah,
line him up against the high school football team and he's going to light him up. Okay.
Right.
And then the very next week he comes in, throws three picks and knocks his team out of the playoffs against a division rival. And he played like crap. He played like Tony Romo. If Ike Taylor's in that game, if Keenan Lewis is playing that game, Tony Romo throws picks, and the Dallas Cowboys lose that game. Be that as it may, the Steelers almost won that game. We gave the game away on a game-ending interception.
Yeah, I think the focus, if the focus is going to be on turnovers, it's got to be on eliminating turnovers on the offensive side. And I wouldn't even say that necessarily that wasn't a problem in the season, but it became a problem late in the season. Starting with Cleveland, and then from that point on, turnovers became a huge problem. Ben Roethlisberger threw four interceptions in those first, eight games or nine games of the season, and then from then on, I mean, the Steelers just turned the ball over, it seemed like, three times a week.
Well, and lots of times to end the game.
Right.
At least twice.
Yeah, and turning the ball over in critical situations. Yeah, I mean, Antonio Brown's turnover after a great punt return against Dallas, looks like we're going to go up two scores in this game and seal the deal. And instead, he fumbles the punt. They go on to tie the game. Then Ben throws the pick late. Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, I kind of have a problem if, you know, we'll talk about the draft and what we want to do in another podcast. But I'll spoiler alert right now. I'm not going to say linebacker. It should be the first pick in the draft.
I'm looking at, you know, Given the way the whole season played out, I don't know how you look at it any other way. And I know the Steelers, look, the tradition is Steelers always have great linebackers, and right now, you know, our great linebackers are, you know, they're fading into the sunset. You know, so maybe they're going to come back for one more year or whatever, but we do need new blood at the linebacker position. And the Steelers have been able to find them, for many years, and this is really like a. It's getting to be a low point in Steeler linebacking history. So I kind of get where Art Rooney's coming from with that. But from a winning football games point of view, you talked about a couple of young guys either haven't gotten any playing time or injured or, you know, have shown us some of what they can do. So, I don't know that we need a linebacker in the first round. I'm going to be with you on that. I already alluded to. I want to see the offense. You know, look, we want to protect Ben. We want do these things, and the Steelers did that for the first half of the season, and the offense was pretty good. But I think there is no substitute for an effective running game, and it starts with offensive line. And I think the Steelers have put a lot of resources into the offensive line at this point.
That's funny because, you know, 3 years ago you were saying that they put, you know, I remember very clearly on this podcast, the three of us talking about how they hadn't done enough to address the offensive line.
They put nothing. No, they neglected it for years.
Yeah.
So now they've put a lot. I'm not saying, you know, they're done, but I think that I don't know. Maybe we need one more offensive lineman. I don't know. It seems to me like we've got a lot of guys, and if they actually play, then I think we probably have a good offensive line.
Yeah.
But I will always be a believer that football games are won. Whoever controls the line of scrimmage on whatever side of the ball, that's the team that's going to win.
The game is definitely still won in the trenches, as much as, you know, ESPN wants to call it the year of the quarterback and all this BS and talk about the 5,000-yard passers. You look at the teams that do well, they win in the trenches. That's always going to be the case. I agree with you. You know, I mean, it's a offensive line, defensive line. We have to get a running game going. I'm a believer in Dwyer. You know, I'm not necessarily going to go out there and say, like, look, let's take a run. Let's find another running back for this. I would say, let's do this. If we can find an elite running back that we feel like can come in and really be a game changer, let's go after that guy. But I feel like, you know, you give Dwyer a full season as the guy, not we're going to rotate him in, not every two plays he has to come out, and then there's going to be the Redmond drive. Let's see what Jonathan Dwyer can do with 25 carries a game.
Well, he's got to be able to do it. I mean, you pointed that out.
Yeah,
I don't think he can. I think really the only chance he's got of being an actual force, an actual factor in the NFL as a starting premier running back is he's got to do what some of these guys do in the offseason. He's got to work out. He's got to come in a leaner, tougher, stronger, guy with more stamina, and more determined and more focused and smarter. Seriously.
What's funny about what you're saying is that when he had been a guy up until last season that had been a guy who, you know, comes into camp out of shape and the media's going, uh-oh, is this the year that Tomlin finally gives up on Dwyer? But instead, last year he came in totally in shape and the reports out of camp were, wow, Dwyer looked great. And of course, and then he earns the role as being, you know, the starter, but still wasn't able to do it, you know, consistently throughout games where he was playing a significant role. He took himself out, after two plays. I mean, it's, you know, so
he's got to raise it. He's got to take it to another level.
Got to take it to another level.
Otherwise, he's just another running back that nobody's ever heard of,
right?
You know, other than us for a few years, and then
yep.
Who's next? So. So I'm not sold. I like the way he runs when he runs, but, you know, there's not enough of it.
Yeah. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about Omar Khan. If you're not familiar with who Omar Khan is, he is the director of football and business administration for the Steelers. Basically, that's a stupid role for what he does. He's the money guy, right? He's the salary cap expert for the Pittsburgh Steelers. He's a personnel guy, but the reason he's on the map is that he has been able to keep this Steeler team together, keep guys, you know, in Steeler uniforms that I think we all thought wouldn't be in Steeler uniforms. Guys like Lamar Woodley, Lawrence Timmons, Troy Polamalu, Ryan Clark, Aaron Smith for all those years, Ben Roethlisberger, you know, all these guys, Antonio Brown now has a long-term deal. He's kept all these guys together and figured out a way with the salary cap in place, especially now with the salary cap not going up as much as it used to keep these guys in place. And while there may be some turnover this year, a more significant turnover than we've seen in the past couple years, by and large, the core guys on this team, the guys who you would say, look, we can't replace that guy if we lose him, he's done a great job of keeping those guys on the team and figuring out a way to manipulate the salary to fit it under. He is now going to interview for the Jets, so he may be leaving the Steelers, which I think it would be a significant blow to the team. The Jets firing Mike Tannenbaum, their general manager, a couple weeks ago, so Omar Khan is a candidate there. Hopefully we keep him, but, you know, again, he'll be interviewing for general manager, so again, a big raise for him there, or a big move up for him as being, you know, being general manager of, first of all, the New York Jets, a New York team. And being there with Rex Ryan, I guess the big question for him in New York will be, what do you do with Tim Tebow?
Well, far be it for me to give advice to Omar, but since we have to talk about something, we're going to talk about this, and I'm going to go ahead and opine anyway, and Omar can take it or leave it. So, look, general manager of a National Football League team, awesome. Opportunity, who would turn it down, right? But I'm going to tell you something. The New York Jets, at this particular moment in time, is a career killer for anybody that wants. It is like, I honest to God, I picture it like the black hole of the NFL right now. It is a horribly bad situation.
Mostly because they didn't start Tim Tebow.
No, mostly because it is a catastrophe Yeah. Okay? That whole, their season was a catastrophe. They're a joke of a team. They really are. Not only do they not win football games, okay? Not only do they blow football. I mean, their performance on the field is horrible and only exceeded by the horse crap coming out of the front office and the coaching staff. They're even worse, okay? So, I mean, the stench coming out of the Jets organization is even worse than the stench coming out of the coming off the field when the players take it. Come on, man. You go there, your NFL career is in jeopardy. I don't care who you are.
Well, I actually think going to New York right now is probably a low risk proposition for Omar Khan.
Why? Because there's no expectation.
There's no expectation, right?
I mean,
really.
Come on.
Really? I mean, first of all, anything that goes wrong there is not going to be blamed on Omar Khan. It's going to be blamed on Rex Ryan, and Rex Ryan knows that he's basically coaching for his job next season. And so you're going to get put into a situation with a desperate coach, and so, you know, that's not a great situation for a GM who's going to have a 5-year plan and a way to rebuild this team. You know, Rex Ryan certainly doesn't have a 5-year plan. He has a 1-year plan. It's got to be win now. And so, that can be crappy for him. But overall, you know, he's going to have a job there. If Rex Ryan gets fired, he will not go with Rex Ryan.
Does he not get the opportunity or the option to fire Rex Ryan right now?
Yeah, I don't know.
Own guy in?
I mean,
if you're going to take the GM job, you know, why would you want a 1-year call? Like, okay, I'm coming into the Jets. I'm the GM. And I'm going to go into a draft, and I'm going to work with a coach, and we're going to put a philosophy together, and we're going to see how we can win. So now I'm going to take this thing, and I'm going to go, okay, my key guy, I'm giving him 1 year, and he's out. Come on, that's a recipe for that doesn't make any sense. That's exactly what I expect to happen. I expect him to get an ultimate, like, you're hired. Okay, yeah, Omar, you're hired, but you don't get to pick your coach. This is your coach. And if he doesn't do good, then next year you can.
I think you interview for the job knowing that Rex Ryan's going to be your coach for at least one more year.
That's crap. Don't even take it. Wait
I know. I, well, listen. Yeah. I mean, there's merit to that. All right, let's move on. Speaking of guys interviewing with other teams, Todd Haley, who we talked about last week a lot in regards to the offensive coordinator position. Number one, it's been basically confirmed by Art Rooney that Todd Haley, should he want to return to the Steelers next year, should he not get another job somewhere else, he is welcomed back. So Todd Haley, the offensive coordinator next year, unless he gets a job with the Arizona Cardinals, the team he coached in 2008 as their offensive coordinator when they played the Pittsburgh Steelers in the Super Bowl. It does seem to me, Joe, that this would be, if Todd Haley was going to get a head coaching job, and I don't think anyone expected him to get one this offseason, but if he did get one, this would be the one. You know, having history there with those players, with that team, and his style may fit with that offense.
I'm surprised that, I have to tell you that, you know, we first heard about this interview and all that, the interest of the Cardinals in Haley, after we did the day after we did the last podcast, which I'm thinking was like over a week ago, right?
Yeah, it was over a week ago. Right about a week ago.
So, I mean, it's kind of like stretching out, you know, so I'm getting the idea now that the Cardinals, you know, Haley's not their first choice. He's like their fallback position. That's what it sounds like to me. So I got a feeling they've got somebody else that they have in mind that they really want, but they may not be able to get him.
Yeah.
Because I don't understand what the delay is about. I mean, Andy Reid's got a job in Kansas City already. They knew what they wanted. That was it. They worked it out. I don't think Todd Haley, you know, is not the problem. He's not like, well, I don't want to give you guys an answer because, you know, I got three other offers I'm entertaining. He's got one place he's going to be head coach. That's it. So I don't think he's holding up the works. I think the Cardinals have something else in mind.
I think that's very true. You know, that's got to be the case, right? Look, Todd Haley has roots there. He knows the players. He knows the organization. But, you know, he's not exactly coveted around the NFL as far as, you know, a coaching specimen. He went to Kansas City. He went to the playoffs for 1 year. But that wasn't a long-term success he had there. He goes to Pittsburgh where they have half a season of, you know, borderline, you know, well, good borderline, maybe borderline, I don't want to say borderline great, good offense. But then, you know, it just kind of fizzles down the stretch. I would be surprised if he got the job. I think the only way he gets the job is, like you said, Joe, if the guy that they're coveting, and I'm pretty sure it's the Denver offensive coordinator, if he doesn't get the job, then maybe they give it to Haley. But I would expect Haley to come back next year.
Yeah, you know, if Haley goes, then it's kind of a easy out for the whole, you know, Ben doesn't like Todd and, you know, all this garbage that we had to listen to.
Uh-huh. Which I'm sure, I know you just loved it.
No, I can't stand it. But I am never one who agrees with letting the Indians, you know, run the show and dictate to the Chiefs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just not. So in this case, you know, Todd Haley returning, Art Rooney saying, hey, Haley wants to come back. He's welcome back. And then he does come back. Todd Haley saying, this is the direction of the team. We're going to have an offense that's more under control, or, you know, whatever it is that he's, you know, that he, how he, however he worded it. I want that. I want the traditional Pittsburgh Steelers, on the offensive side of the ball. We have not had that for 5 years. I know we had some success with that.
Would you be like, are you going to be upset if it is, you know, if his offense next year is just a, you know, a tweak of what he did this year?
Oh, the whole dink and dunk style?
Yeah, I mean, you know, adding, you know, obviously you're going to have to add an element of, you know, big chunks in there. And, you know, continue to lean on the running game as much as he did last year.
I don't have as much. I don't have. I love Lynn Swann and John. Those guys were the kings of the bomb. Okay, I mean they caught long passes. That's what they did. That's what made them famous.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay, and I'm not against that. I don't want to. I guess we're gonna do, if Haley comes back and runs, we're gonna have more wide receiver screens, you know, and we're gonna have all that kind of junk. That's okay.
Well, we had it under Bruce Arians, so it's not going away. Maybe that's not a Todd Haley thing. Maybe that's a Mike Tomlin thing.
You gotta
look at what's consistent there. I mean, maybe it's just a Ben thing. All right, we'll talk more about Todd Haley in the coming weeks. You know, I'm sure that's going to be an ongoing conversation in the off season. But one final thing on this podcast I do want to bring up, and that is Bill Cowher. Joe, I don't know if you heard this, but Bill Cowher was asked at a press conference, because CBS is going to be doing the Super Bowl this year. So their press conference, and someone asked Bill Cowher, hey, are you open? Are you going to be open to coaching again sometime soon? And Bill Cowher's answer was, yes, he is going to get back into coaching. Doesn't know when, but I can't imagine that he's going to take too many more years off. I mean, it's going to turn into a Marty Schottenheimer type situation where he's just been out of football for too long. So, what are your thoughts, Joe?
I mean, that's exactly what you start thinking. I don't know. I got a feeling I think he fantasizes about it and romanticizes it a little bit. He's a smart guy. He's got it very good. I'm sure he's paid very well to do the commentary that he does, because, you know, he's a famous guy. He's well spoken. He's well liked and respected in the football circles. And I think, you know, you can be somewhat damaged. Mike Ditka was not damaged very much by going to the Saints, but Bill Cowher is a large personality. But I don't think he's, even his personality is dwarfed by Mike Ditka's, you know, the aura of Mike Ditka, you know, unless on the sidelines in Chicago with that defense that he, you know,
mm-hmm.
I just think, you know, he's only second to, you know, to the likes of Vince Lombardi and George Halas and, you know, maybe Tom Landry and, you know, he's up there with those guys. He didn't win as many games as those guys, but he's got that personality. So he survived he was miserable at the Saints. Jimmy Johnson managed, you know, he went back to the the Dolphins, and he was miserable there.
Survived. But if Bill Cowher, so Bill Cowher coming back now, right? Yeah. What do you think the prerequisites are for a Bill Cowher team? Like, what do you think he's interested in coming back to?
Well, he wants control. I mean, he said that.
Yeah.
He basically wants to be a GM.
Be able to pick his GM, right?
Well, I mean, if you pick your GM,
you're
boss. Yeah. So I want the GM to report to me, the coach.
Right.
I mean, you know, that's what that amounts to.
Right. I haven't seen that since, like, Holmgren, right? I mean, there's not too many – that kind of power –
it doesn't usually go well.
No, it doesn't.
No, it doesn't. I like Bill Cowher. There's a chance he could come back and do well, but really, there's only one coach I can think of that left football for this length of time or longer, came back and had success, and that was Dick Vermeil.
That's the only one.
That's really the only one. I mean, Shanahan went from team to team and had success, but he wasn't out of it, you know?
Right. I mean, how long is? I mean, it's been 6 years since Bill Cowher's coached. It's
been a long time, and same thing's happening to Gruden too. He keeps, you know, toying with the idea of coming back, but you know, I think for these guys that are doing so well in broadcasting, you know, they can only diminish their persona,
yeah,
with their audience by coming back, because the odds are very much against their success, and I think for Bill Cowher being out so long, and then coming back and making all these demands and getting them, you know, I think the length of time that you're out and the more power that you have when you come back is, you know, it's going to lead to even worse success. Like, you know, as those both increase, your odds of winning decrease.
Yeah,
because you're out of it. I mean, you know, I know he's an analyst and he thinks he's paying attention, but it is not the same thing as being a head coach of an NFL team, having to compete in the league every single week, and especially on a franchise like the Steelers that was a contender almost every year that he was there. So I understand where his mind is. He was like, hey man, you know, he was a guru by the end of his career. He was his end of his time with the Steelers. He was a guru. He understood the NFL like practically nobody else in the league. So I understand where he's like, hey, I should be head of football operations. I should be the guy, you know, I know more about this crap than the GM does because I do it more. And I, you know, so I get that, but not anymore. Not anymore. That time passed now.
Do you see him coming back in a situation that's, you know, something like a San Diego where it's, you know, that's a kind of a short-term fix. You already have a lot of your key talent is already there. Or, you know, you see Bill Cowher coming back to a situation like Jacksonville where it is, you know, you're going to basically, you know, empty cupboard type, start from scratch.
I mean, I honestly don't know what his mindset is.
Where do you think he fits in best?
I think he should stay retired. I don't see him recreating his magic. I just don't. I'm not saying he's not a capable guy. He's not a smart guy. He's not a good guy. But I mean, look at the bouncing around that Parcells did, right? And he had some success in New England, but he really didn't have much success anywhere else. And I had that short tenure with the Jets, they didn't really do much, right? So he'll go somewhere and maybe they'll make the playoffs. Or, you know, but what are they really going to be a contender? And then, I mean, I don't know. Does he have the patience to go to Jacksonville and build a team there from scratch?
Well, don't you think that the kind of the legacy of Bill Cowher is that he was able to do a lot with very little, right? I mean, he was able to take teams that were, whether you want to say they were underachieving or they, you know, they were just kind of talent depleted, you know, he didn't exactly take over for a winner when Chuck Knoll retired, but he was able to right away take that team third year he was in the Super Bowl, fourth year he was in the Super Bowl.
His first year they were.
They were the playoff team from the beginning, but they, you know, 1995 the Super Bowl I think was his fourth year?
It was year number three, I think. But they had the best record in the AFC or in the NFL, I don't remember which, his first season. But my thought on that, if I'm going to be honest with you, Tony, my thought on that was, you know, here was this was a team that needed a new coach. The idea or the word on the street on the old coaches, the Tom Landry, Don Shula, and Chuck Knoll, those three guys, because they were peers of each other, right?
Mm-hmm.
The word was that these guys, you know, first the thing was the conventional wisdom was, well, the games passed these guys by.
Yeah.
Right? Now, I don't believe that. The thing that I did buy was these young players, they don't relate to the young players. And the players don't listen to them anymore because they have nothing new to say. Chuck Knoll coached for 20-something, maybe 27 years, I think he was head coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers, right?
Mm-hmm.
From 69 until 91. How many years was that? You know, 23 years, right? Don Shula was longer than that. Tom Landry was maybe about that time, maybe a little bit longer. So the idea is what they're saying is, look, you can't say anything. The team, the players have heard everything that you could possibly come up with to say to them. Okay. And it's just noise now. So Bill Cowher comes back and these guys haven't heard his story. So maybe.
Can he recreate the magic or? I mean,
I don't think so. I think that team, my point was, and my feeling was, even while Chuck Knoll was there, this team is better than their record. I don't know why they keep screwing up and they don't win, but I mean, Rod Woodson was in place. Carnell Lake, I believe, was there already. They had a lot of good players. Barry Foster there already. In 1989, I think, he let a freaking ball in San Francisco roll into the end zone and like it was a punt. He was running away from it like it was a punt. That was his rookie season.
Yeah.
And then he went, and then Bill Cowher takes him, makes him a starting running back behind a good offensive line, and he challenges Tony Dorsett. He comes within 100 yards of the rushing title that year.
So can he take over? Could he take over a team like one of the most underachieving teams in football, San Diego Chargers? Need a coach?
Maybe. Probably. Probably he goes in San Diego and they win a lot.
Yeah.
But I don't know that it lasts.
Yeah. Or Chicago. I mean, Chicago to me is a situation where Bill Cowher can go in and, you know, he can make that.
Their defense is diminished, though, right?
It is. It is getting diminished, yeah. All right. Well, that's going to do it. Any final thoughts, Joe?
I am looking forward to the playoffs in about 48 hours, right? Less than 48 hours now?
Yes.
I know there's no Steelers in the playoffs, but I love football.
Wouldn't you say it was kind of a weird wild card weekend? A lot of bad football last week.
It was, yeah. The games themselves were disappointing. They were not as good. In particular, the Redskins game. Shanahan's taking a lot of heat after the game about, hey, you know, he did RG3 wrong, you know,
yeah,
by letting him play. And I agree with that. I mean, we've talked about that in terms of Ben Roethlisberger and the coaches letting him play when he's obviously hurt, and the Steelers lost games because of it.
Yep.
And the Redskins lost that game. I mean, I was talking to some of my Redskins fan buddies today and since that game, and there's almost no argument at all when you say, hey, if they put Cousins in earlier, they might have won the game.
Might have won the game, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Because it's so obvious that the Seahawks figured out
that Griffin he couldn't move. Griffin couldn't move.
As soon as they figured out he wasn't mobile,
yeah.
it was just kill the quarterback.
Yeah, it really was.
And he wasn't, you know, he's a rookie quarterback. He's not the reason he's so effective was not because he could read a defense so well, okay? He threw the ball well. He made good throws, but he made good decisions with the football, and he knew when to take off and run it. And he burned the hell out of defenses, and he made defenses account for him. Well, if accounting for him is come after him with everything you got, and he ain't going to find nobody. Well, you know, and that is on Shanahan. He should have figured that out, and he should have made a change.
So that
the other side of that is, hey, so he pulls him, right, before the whole world agrees that, oh, man, this guy's really hurt bad,
yeah.
And put Cousins in, and then they lose anyway, then everybody's all over Shanahan for, oh, you know, shouldn't have pulled your star. You dance with the one who brung you. You know, you can hear all that crap, too. So.
Yeah. Okay, so let me ask you this then. Being that you were unimpressed by the 4 wild card games, are you going to predict any wild card teams to win this weekend?
Oh, sure.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I got to tell you. I mean, it's hard to pick them. I think I did picks already. I don't know if I did.
Did you do your picks? I haven't done mine.
I actually wrote them down or anything.
Yeah, I have mine. Yeah, I haven't said them yet.
Well, to me, the one I'm most interested in seeing is Seattle going to Atlanta.
Yep.
And of course, the conventional wisdom is, well, Seattle's a bad road team and blah blah. You know that.
Yeah. Well, it's also a 1 o'clock game for a West Coast team.
All that.
Yeah.
Got it.
Heard 10 a.m. game for them.
Right. All right. So. Here's the thing about them. You know, just a couple of things about that. Okay, so they're 3-5 on the road. But these guys have been winning. They've been winning a lot of games. They're a dynamic team. And
they're really good on defense.
All right, and they I believe they can play on turf, too.
Yeah.
They're good on turf.
But can they beat the best team in the NFC?
You see, that's the dig, okay? The Falcons are all pissed off because people like me say, you know, they ain't nobody. They don't play that good, right?
Right.
They're soft. Whatever it is that we say, and I say all of it about them, and they're so angry about it. And I understand why they'd be.
Yeah, I mean, well, yeah. Can you remember a less respected number one seed?
No, but here's their problem, okay? And this is why they continue to be disrespected. Because I was musing about this with another football buddy of mine, and I said the problem with them is every time I watch them, they never do anything to change my mind. So I have this opinion, okay? And I'm not dug in. I don't care. Well, Falcons this, Falcons that. What do I care? But do something that proves to me you're a winner, that you're a tough football team and not a team that just gets lucky because the other team loses its mind at some point and then gives you – just hands the game over to you, okay? It would be like going, oh, the Cleveland Browns are a badass team because, man, did you see what they did to the Steelers in week 9 or whatever it was? Well, come on. Was that the Cleveland Browns whipping our ass, or was that the Steelers not showing up for a football game? I think the Falcons are the beneficiaries of a lot of teams that failed to show up or managed to lose their minds at key moments in the game. I got to tell you, every time I watch them, that's what I'm seeing. So my prediction is that Seattle goes into Atlanta and they wipe the dorm out with them. They whip their ass. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm not sold on Atlanta, not for one second. Don't believe it.
Is that the only one you like? Is that the one?
I think if unless San Francisco defensively, the game is going to be decided there. If San Francisco's defense can knock Green Bay's offense out of rhythm, so that Rodgers can't complete passes,
mm-hmm.
then they win. Or they have a chance at winning. I won't say they win, but they have a chance. If Rodgers is able to play his game and can complete passes, forget it. San Francisco's got no chance. So I think Green Bay probably wins in San Francisco. Who else are we talking about?
Well, then you have
two AFC games. I don't give either road team hardly any chance at all.
Yeah.
I think Baltimore is going to get carved up in Denver.
Yep.
And
the same thing Houston, with Houston, right?
Houston probably. Yeah, I'm more positive only because I think Houston's a way better team than the Ravens. I think the Ravens are just going to get killed by Denver. It may not start right in. It could, but maybe not. I mean, the Ravens are going to be pretty determined early on, but I think they're going to get burned pretty bad, and they're going to cut loose on them. The same thing probably happens in New England, but it's less likely there, because Houston, I think, is a better team than But I think the obvious you just have this Brady Manning showdown again. That's what the NFL wants anyway, but. Because it'll be a big, it'll be a big draw for the AFC Championship game. And then you'll probably have, depending on who wins in the NFC, to go to the NFC Championship, right? Whoever ends up there, especially if it's like Seattle and,
Green Bay, or San Francisco?
So it's either one of those two. So you could have. You could very likely have in the media the AFC Championship is the real Super Bowl.
Yeah. Well, I don't know that many of us could disagree with that, right? I mean, it seems like this is a Peyton Manning, Tom Brady type year. Although, when you look at a team like San Francisco or Seattle, those teams that play, with an aggressive style of defense that can put pressure on quarterbacks and make offenses uncomfortable. We've seen that is a style of offense that's winning more often than not these days.
Defense.
Style
of defense. Right.
Style of defense.
Well,
yeah.
A defense that can knock a rhythm offense out, you don't even recognize the team. It is the most amazing thing to watch when you watch a great defense just take an offense that you think is unstoppable. And make them look like you can't. You're like, are these the same guys? Did somebody steal their jerseys? What happened here?
Yeah,
it is an amazing thing to watch.
Yeah.
I haven't really seen a defense that impresses me that much. But I mean, you never know because it's not really a pressure the quarterback defense. It's more a upset the timing, upset the routes, get in the way.
Some teams can do both, right? I mean, the best defenses in football right now. Really, I think can do a little bit of both, right? They can get at the passer, and then they can also shut you down.
If they can send four, maximum of five, and get pressure.
Yeah.
Then that's the time. But I don't know. Is there any defenses that are doing that?
I think San Francisco when they're playing at their best can do that, and I think same thing goes for Seattle. Now, Seattle lost.
Can they do it to the best quarterbacks in the league?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we won't know anymore with Seattle because they just lost their best pass rusher. To an ACL, so he's out the entire year. If I'm doing my predictions real quick, that injury to Seattle, I don't know. I still like Seattle, although I worry that is it possible that Atlanta could be, a nobody believes in us one seed, and just comes out to ready to shock the world, I guess. I might take Atlanta. In that game, New England and Denver, I think, are destined to meet in the championship game. And then Green Bay, San Francisco is your toss-up game. San Francisco took it to them in week one, but I don't know if I believe in that game, especially now that, you got Kaepernick in there. This is his first playoff game. It's a big game for him. It's a home game, night game. I think I'm going to go with Aaron Rodgers. He's having a great year, and I know that their defense can be a little suspect at times. I'm just not sure Kaepernick is the guy to expose that defense.
I agree with you. Yeah.
So
we missed Mike. This is it's not the same without Mike. So nope. His butt should stop doing all his personal fun and,
Well, I kind of blame I kind of blame myself in this one. Work got in the way this week and planned this out a little too late. But we'll be back full staff on. Next week, and we'll go over the whole MVP stuff. So that being said, you can only feedback SteelerCountry@gmail.com, the website SteelerCountry.net, and the Twitter is twitter.com/SteelerCountry. Remember to send in your MVP, Offensive Player of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year, Most Improved Player, Joe's favorite category. We'll see you next week.